With no further ado, we're going to move on to the show this morning. And again, as I mentioned, we have Trina Kyle Johnson from Makers Long Acres, who are small, local, sustainable farmers. We're going to talk a lot about the farm practices they engage in and some of the unique things that they do to make that possible. So welcome to the show, Trina, Kyle. Good morning. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, either one start, how you came to be here on your farm in Sagal, and your engagement with the land and with North Idaho. Maybe Trina will start with you because I know you're a native.
North Idaho, and agriculture was just kind of a part of my life, and so it just who I am, I guess. It's in my genes. I used to go out in the pastures with my dad and deal with cows, and got my first pigs when I was a little girl, and I really like Idaho. I like the land, the people, the culture.
And the farm's in Sagal, but you didn't start out in Sagal. You started out elsewhere in North Idaho.
I did. I started in St. Mary's, a couple hours south of Sandpoint.
How did you find yourself up north, even further north here?
My parents moved here shortly after I graduated, and I'd come visit, fell in love with the area, and just didn't really want to leave.
Well, I came here about 20 years ago from Iowa, and came up to Sandpoint on a weekend and really never left. Just kind of stayed here, stayed in Sagal, and I love it. I don't think there's any place better.
And so how did the two, I'm just always curious, how did the two of you meet?
Well, I was friends with her sister, and we just at family functions, got to talking, and it's and like, just, hey, we hit it off, and we had a lot in common, so.
Yeah, so it just was, it just worked. It was a friendship that moved into a marriage, and it just works.
And to use a metaphor here, how did you decide to give birth to a farm?
That just, it just happened. My best friend was 92 when he died, and he was my friend for 20-some years. And our farm was originally his farm, or his homestead area. And living there, it just was, we just had to have animals. We weren't even sure we wanted to do farming, and he showed up with a couple of goats, and he's like, looks like you're in the goat business. And just from there it just happened. And so many people were wanting stuff that say, oh well, if we bring out a pig, can we grow it there? And we're like, well, I guess. And it just mushroomed from there. And they say if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. Apparently, whoever said that wasn't a farmer, because it's a lot of work. But we love what we do. We just really love what we do.
Now, for sake of full disclosure, you and I have known each other for a while, and we've had some conversations philosophically about what you're doing, and I've read some of the postings you've had online and all. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy of the way that you raise food.
We really want people to know their farmer. If you know your farmer, you know your food, you have more control over what's going into your body, and everything that goes into your body affects you. And if you can keep it local, if you can know your farmer, I think you know the work that goes into it. There's less waste. I know for us personally at our house, we don't throw food away. We know how hard we work to get it to our table. And even our kids are much the same way. And it's a passion for us.
And it's just a lot less waste. There's not the transportation involved of going from farm to a processing plant, to a distribution center, to a grocery store, and then finally to your home. We go from the farm to the processor, back to the farm.
So tell us how you do that.
We just raise them, and then when it's butcher day, we load them up and they go. We train them though to a trailer, so no part of it is stressful. We know when that day is coming, and so we just move the trailer into their pasture and just kind of start feeding them in there and get them comfortable with it, because we just don't want them stressed. We want it ethical the whole way through.
Now let's start with the particular breeds of pigs you're raising, other animals. These are special breeds, and That was one of the conversations we had early on. I discovered the wonders of Mangalese pork a few months ago, and you're snickering here because you had some thoughts on that topic, and
yes.
Then and it delved into this whole interesting, to me, fascinating study of the pig raising you do, for lack of a better way to put it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we set out doing this, and we were raising just regular hogs, just, you know, your average pink pig. And we happened on some other rare breeds, and I had sold one to my cousin, and he called me up, and he's like, oh, my goodness, you need to taste this. It's so good. And I said, well, I know it's good. I raised it. And he said, no, it's better than your other pork. And so, long story short, we drove down to Colfax and I tried it, and it was some of the best pork I had ever eaten. And I had always thought the breed thing was nonsense until we tried it. And that was a red wattle, that first one, wasn't it?
Red wattle,
mm-hmm. Yes. And then we heard about the Mangalitsa, and we couldn't wait to get out there and buy them. But at the time, there was only
50
in the U.S., something like that. It was a really small number, but the Lord blessed us, and we were able to get some. And but then we had to have them bred, and then we had to raise them up. And we finally get the Mangalitsa back from the processor, and it was just too fatty. And we all know fat's flavor, but this was like you take one bite, and it's amazing meat, and then the next bite was nothing but a mouthful of fat. And we thought, it has to get better than this.
Yeah, and you know, the fat is flavorful and it makes awesome lard, but, you know, there's gotta be some other breeds that could be introduced to that to maybe streamline that fat or make it different. And so we just started researching more and more and trying to find different breeds that would bring a better quality to that flavor of fat.
And the time frame. We were looking at 18 months to get one to the table from the time it was born, 18 months. Then it wasn't fresh. It wasn't delicious. And so we started adding in just all the other breeds. And every time we would get one to the table, we would taste it. And we were our own worst critics. And I think it was when we started adding Chinese Meishan that things really started to change. The Chinese Meishan is another nearly extinct breed. And they have a really fine marbling, and that goes through the meat. It's in the muscle, and so it just distributed better. And they have high litter numbers, too, because a lot of these breeds, like the Mulefoot, they have 2 to 4 babies each time. And if you're waiting 6 months and you only have 2 babies, that's not very much return. But the Chinese Meishan, they can have up to 22 babies.
Just so the listeners are clear, we're not talking about genetic splicing here. We're talking about crossbreeding.
In the barnyard. We have the mamas and the papas, and then we put them in the pen together, and then you wait 3 months, 114 days, 114 days, they say, and then you have the babies, and then you have to grow them up. So, no, not gene splicing. We're going out. We're buying them. We're going all over the U.S., looking at genetics, tasting meat before we buy pigs. That one summer, how many miles did we put on bringing home? It was ridiculous. We were...
We went to Wyoming and
Iowa and zipped down to Texas, yeah. And all these places to gather our genetics.
So how many generations did it take for you to get to the point you were satisfied?
9, I think now.
Yeah.
We're on about the 9th generation.
So just doing some quick math there, that's probably about 4 years.
A little over, because not all of them were successful. I mean, we want to say we were great at this, but we weren't. We would search out a cross and we would try it, and there's a breed called an Old Spot, and we thought that was going to be the ticket, and we thought it was going to be a great hog, and it just didn't do what we thought it was going to do.
The flavor of the meat wasn't much different
than anything else,
you know, and more common breeds. So.
So now, if you're happy where they are, is that self-sustainable, or do you need to keep crossbreeding certain types to reproduce this? Are they reproducible?
They're very reproducible, and that was the other thing, is sometimes it was hit, and then sometimes it was miss with the next litter. But now we have it where we're consistently getting the meat that we want, the grow out times, because that's the other thing is the grow out time. You have to be able to get them to the table quickly with a little input. And we've got them, so they require a lot less feed than a traditional hog too, which is great.
It's a great segue into our next question. One of the mottos I've seen you use is from farm gate to dinner plate. So getting things to the table quickly.
Yes.
Tell us about how you do that.
We love to offer the food as fresh as we can. And so we have a little farm stand at our house. It's just a little shed. And inside we have a meat freezer, and folks can come out and they can buy a pork chop or bacon or sausage, and they can look and see the pasture it was grown in. And a lot of times the pig that's in the freezer was alive in the pasture a week prior. And it helps people be able to connect. They get to come into the farm. They get to see the animals. If we're around, we do farm tours. You know, we'll put their kid on a horse, or they get to hold piglets. It's a lot of fun for people to be involved. We want to be a community farm.
It sounds like a lot of work, and I'm sure it is. That the farm stand approach, though, versus the farmer's market has some benefits for you, obviously.
I just think, personally, I love connecting with people. They can come to the farm stand, and you can spend time with them, ask them questions, ask them about their family, what they do, and, you know, kind of tailor what they want for their dinner and make good suggestions and just talk to them. And it seems like the more that we talk to people, the more they come back, and the more that we are connected. Hey, this guy knows this person. He can help you with this. And so it's just a community connection all around.
And we could probably do some of that at a farmer's market, but we don't have the time to just sit for, you know, 5 hours on a Saturday. We are so hands-on. People see our farm and see what all we do, and they think that maybe we have this big team and employees, but it's Kyle and I and occasionally kids, our kids, if they're feeling up to it.
Which might help or might actually make things longer.
Exactly, but, exactly.
You must have a pretty loyal following in order to be able to sustain that model.
We do. We have some of the best followers, I think, on the internet. We really do. We have such a supportive community. Yeah. And we're pretty active on our social media accounts, and we have a lot of interaction, which is just really fun. We feel like bringing people in. We want it to be their farm too. We want them to know the animals' names. We want them to know our names. We want to be approachable, because I think a lot of times there's a big disconnect between what goes on in farming versus what people think goes on in farming. And we love to just educate and kind of dispel those myths and the mystique of it all.
So tell us about the range of other products you have besides the pigs.
Oh, wow. Well, Trina is a known wonderful soup maker. So she has decided to put some soup mixes in the farm stand, and we can't keep them in stock. They're going faster than we can get the ingredients for and put them in there. We started a thing past couple weeks that we're trying to do some more baked goods out of the farm stand. And another thing that Trina came up with is she makes a hand salve out of the lard that we get back from the pigs. And that's one thing that we were able to ship out and able to, you know, send to people, send to our followers in California or Ohio, Pennsylvania, wherever. So that's been great to be able to.
And boot grease. We make like a leather conditioner out of the lard. And a lot of this just developed. It's stuff that works for us. And people would say, you know, oh, my boots are not waterproof anymore. We'll say, well, use some of this. And then they'd come back, hey, can I buy some? Well, I guess. Or you could just have some.
Did I see somewhere some baked goods or something going on? Or
yeah, he Kyle was a baker before he was a farmer. And so on Saturdays, we set out baked goods sometimes as we can. A lot of times it's pre-order. You have to kind of pre-order it so we know what we're baking.
How much to make.
Yeah. And timing. It's not something we do all the time. It's kind of, in the winter, there's not a lot he can be doing out there. So, well,
If you do set up a CSA with some of the specialty pork and some soup and baked goods, that would be one that would be very interesting.
Yes.
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 Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the education. You're starting up or have started up some classes.
Yes.
Or at least some discussion about starting up classes.
Yes. And we've done classes off and on for years. We just want people to feel empowered. A lot of people want to make the leap into growing their own food in one capacity or another, but they're not sure how. And, you know, they get chickens, but they don't know how to process them. Or they buy piglets and they try and get into a processor. But with COVID, it really backed up the processing and a lot of processors left the industry. So there's a real shortage. And so people have these pigs, but they can't get them into the freezer. And same with chickens. There's not a lot of chicken butchers. And so we just started doing the classes on the farm for the butchery. And then the same like cheese making and all of these things. We want people to realize it's not that hard to do. It's just once you do it, and it's intimidating. I remember the first time I was going to render lard, and I thought I'd, you know, need to put a handkerchief on my head and stand there with a big kettle and stir it all day. And it wasn't anything like that. You just drop it in a crock pot and strain it off. So
you make it sound so simple, and we've talked about the butchery and the lard making, but there's a whole series or a series envisioned for homesteading.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we want to do some real upcoming classes on maybe some companionship planting and the butchery, and we want to do a two-day event where it's not just hog slaughtering, but the breaking down, the cutting, and the wrapping. Our oldest daughter is a butcher, and she's really good at what she does, and she's a great teacher, and so we want to have her there and just other classes. Kyle, he wants to talk to people about sourdough, and we plan to put out a schedule, and people can come out and learn and join in on these things.
Have fun. That's, life is supposed to be fun. Yeah. Life is supposed to be, you know, enjoyable. And the more you know, the more skills that you acquire.
And it helps build community. A lot of people that are good friends now were originally they attended a cheese class, or maybe we used to do a milking goat care class, and we met people through that. And I think it helps in community because we all have things we know. And if we share our knowledge, it just makes for a better community.
So classes are open to all experience levels?
Usually, if not, it's listed. A lot of the butchery class, at least the hog one, we try not to have a lot of little kids there. Just there's the level of danger, potential danger. I mean, we have safety in play. And parents have to judge, is your kid ready to chop the head off of a chicken? Yeah. You know, I mean, we can't make that decision for someone. And for us, it's a natural. Our little daughter, she teaches the chicken butchering class at 9 years old. So for us, it's not an issue. But we understand if someone's not seen that before, it can be graphic.
Yeah.
Or it can be difficult, you know, so.
And depending on whether they grew up on a farm in Idaho or recently moved here and fallen in love with the idea of homesteading, might have different background sensitivities.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we never want to make that decision for someone.
Is there a season to your classes? Do they go on throughout the year?
I think we kind of slow down in winter just because of it's winter.
Yeah, it's winter.
It's winter. It's cold. We don't have some big fancy barn that we can do it indoors. If you come to the farm for a class, dress warm or, you know, plan to be hot if it's hot because there's not an indoor shelter. There's not anything like that. It's just in the field.
So if someone's listening and wants to find out more about the classes, what's the best way for them to get that information?
Always checking our social media if you have social media. And if not, we have a website.
It's makerslongacres.com.
Makerslongacres.com. And the Facebook page would be search for Makers Long Acres.
The Facebook page is Makers Long Acres, and it's pretty active. Yeah. We try and post a couple times a day usually.
Well, we're going to take a short music break here, a little bit of Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and then come back with some more interesting things that Kyle and Trina do. And so stick with us. If you've just tuned in, this is KRFY's Morning Show. I'm your host, Phil Huff. And our guests today are Trina and Kyle Johnson with Makers Long Acres Farm. And we're talking about all things local, sustainable in farming. So hang on and we'll have a little bit of Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. That was the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band with Ripplin. Seemed like an appropriate thing for the day to be talking about dirt. And we're back. This is KRFY's morning show. I'm your host, Phil Huff. With me today in the studio are Trina and Kyle Johnson from Makers Long Acres Farm. We're talking about sustainable farm practices and some of the specialty lines of pigs they've raised and the direct-to-consumer model that they use. And before we wrap up too far on that, it sounds like the pig breeding season's going well. Tell us a little bit about the coming spring.
Yes, we had a really good farrowing out this year, and we have a little bit of lull right now in January, but we're going to be amping back up in February all the way through April, and then we breed all year round. We have piglets on the ground all year.
So we have a lot of them. A whole lot of them right now. Our mamas, they just really outdid themselves this time. Well, so, we had one that had 17 piglets, another had 15. So we have a lot of piglets.
So a good time to get into the signature pigs that you do. Tell us about the location for the farm.
We are at 21 Shepherd Lake Loop. So about a mile down to Tallahatchie Road, mm-hmm. and that's where you'll find the farm stand. And mm-hmm. so,
do people need to come out by appointment, or they can just come out and walk around and check things out most days?
We are open from 7 to 7. And if we're there, we'll greet you. If we're not, just go on in, and it's open. And
have a look around.
Yeah.
Self-serve on your honor, and there's little QR codes people can check out with their credit card or their phone. We have one gal, she does little IOUs and then comes and makes good on them eventually. So we just make it work.
It's an honor system that works here.
It is. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we love the connection of that. We have another lady, she comes out and buys one or two eggs and sometimes four if her grandkids are visiting. But we love that. We love that connection, and we love to be able to see her grab four eggs and say, "Oh, your grandkids, how are they doing? They're up for the weekend." We love that connecting with people.
The way egg prices have gone, it's hard to afford much more than four at a time.
Oh yeah, I guess so. But we thought we were selling them for a quarter a piece. We thought that was a little high, but it is what it is.
It all catches up.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I think that's really interesting, and I'd like you to elaborate some on. And this is where I think we first met last summer or the summer before, at one of our local breweries. Kyle, you were picking up the leftover malted barley and piling that stinky stuff into the back of a pickup truck. And I was just amazed and wondered what it was for. So answer that question.
Well, that is part of our pig ration. They get the spent grains from Mutara Brewery here in town. And, you know, each malted barley has a different flavor, and the pigs have their choices of what they like. They definitely like the porter more than other ones because it's a little bit sweeter. Yeah. But it's a really digestible feed for them. It's high in protein, high in lysine, and it helps brewers from around the country to be able to get rid of what would be considered a waste product for them. And instead of taking it to the landfill, having farmers come and take it and feed it to their animals.
It seems like almost the ultimate in reuse, recycle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, we'll meet friends up at the brewery when we're picking grain up, and we're like, "Hey, are you pig farming tonight? Because the more beer you drink, the more he's got to brew." So
yeah, if you go to Utara and have a beer, I guess you can say you're a pig farmer.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think that it's an easy way to contribute.
It
is much appreciated, and the pigs appreciate it too.
Well, it's very, very, very novel, and it's, you know, great to see innovation like that. And as we're talking about innovation, one of the other things that I'd like to spend a little time here is, if you meet the Johnsons at Utara, almost always there's Ray. And she is so special. I couldn't do her story justice. And Trina, as a mom, why don't you take us there?
Our little Ray, she is, we like to say, our little ray of sunshine. And she is a firecracker. She has so much compassion and passion for people. And she just goes through life trying to make a difference wherever she sees a difference needs made. She doesn't just question things. She goes out, she figures things out, and she's a solution girl. And about 4 years ago, she noticed homeless people, and she just couldn't believe the injustice that people were sleeping outside, sleeping on streets. Mm-hmm. And she set about changing that. And so she started gathering stuff and asking other people for things that she could take to them for Christmas. And it mushroomed from her taking these little tiny lunch sack size bags of treats to the homeless, 20 of those, to this huge endeavor where she personally distributed 300 backpacks and 300 stockings to the homeless. And she didn't drop them at a shelter. She didn't take them to a mission. No, she handed them out. She prayed with the people. She hugged them. And she gathered all this stuff. A lot of our following on Facebook, she had an Amazon wish list. And people could send gloves. They could send the stuff that she wished was in the backpacks. And then she put them all together. And it was kind of a team of us put it together. Yeah, Utara helped with that. And we put them together. But it's her big thing. She just marches through life, making a difference, making people smile. She finds so much joy in bringing other people joy.
And she has engaged others to help. But it's clear what I've seen her that Ray's in charge.
Oh,
100%.
Ray is always in charge. Always in charge. There's times she'll come into the house and she's mad and she'll be talking about, well, that guy, I don't like the way he's feeding the pigs. That guy. And I get to thinking maybe, you know, someone stopped at the farm stand and he's helping. I'll say, well, what guy are you talking about? Mom, that guy you married. Oh,
well,
your dad.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Ray is in charge. Yeah. Very much in charge.
And now, for listeners who don't know Ray, how old is she?
She's just turned 10.
Just turned 10. So when she started this, she was 6.
Yeah. And prior to that, she was doing all kinds of adventures.
Where did that come from in her life? What inspired her or what lit the fuse?
I think it was just we were in Spokane on her birthday, and it was January. And it was a nice January. And so we stopped at Dick's Burger downtown, and we got a milkshake and some hamburgers, and she just noticed the homeless people. And she from that moment, she just had all these questions, like, where do they go? What do they do? You know, and she just wouldn't stop. And so as parents, we have to do something about it.
And that's just her personality. Ray just gives everything she's got to the things that are important to her. And she's kind of always been that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She is an amazing and inspiring young woman. It's just remarkable. If someone's listening and they want to help Ray out in her endeavors, what's the best way to connect with the effort?
Again, on our webpage, makerslongacres.com, there's a little section, Ray of Hope. That's kind of what she calls her little thing because she likes to bring them hope. And there's details there, and there'll be the Amazon wish list will populate again soon. She picks it all out, so we don't dare try and do it until she tells us what to put on there. So they can go online and look for Ray of Hope, and they can
Ray of Hope
help from there.
It was almost like she was destined for this.
Yes, I think she was. She's a special girl from the get-go. Yeah.
Well, as we're winding down, are there any topics we haven't touched on or anything you'd like to delve into a little farther?
I think just, you know, coming out to the farm stand and meeting us and seeing where, you know, our farm is and seeing where your food can come from.
And if you have farming questions, ask us. You know, if you're raising pigs and you want pigs and you haven't bought them from us, that's okay. Call us. We would love to help. We want people to be able to take control of their food supply, however that looks. And if we can help in some way, if we can come alongside you in some way, we'd love to do that, however that looks to you.
I think that's a wonderful sentiment to leave off on. Take control of our food supply, because there are so many things in life that we have a hard time controlling, and this is one that's possible.
It is.
Yes, definitely.
So we're wrapping up. This is KRFY 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Phil Huff, on this morning's morning show. And this morning we've been joined by Kyle and Trina Johnson from Makers Long Acres Farm. As always, if you missed any of the interview or want to listen to it again, you can go to krfy.org later in the day or tomorrow and download the podcast.